Mysterio Lionel! Extraordinario! Magnifico!
The closest finish to a Premier League season that we've seen since...
Aguero!
Which warrants a well-deserved look back along with a quick TFC take on the video assistant referee. Welcome to Season 2 of The Football Corner, Munch's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
And my name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new, you can check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox and more.
You can also find us on our website, munchomedia.com or at Munch Sports on all social media.
So Shreyas, why don't we do a quick look back and see where City won it or where Liverpool lost it?
Ooh, let's do this.
One of the closest finishes we've seen in the EPL, right down to the wire.
Yep. 98
and 97.
Too close.
Too close for comfort, especially for Pep, man.
Yep.
So why don't we just attack this by breaking down key matches where we think, the sort of difference crept in between these two sides.
Right.
But before we do that really quickly, I want to talk about Pep Guardiola and Klopp overall.
Yep.
Sort of compare and contrast here, right?
Yep.
So Pep Guardiola, two EPL wins back to back.
Yep.
It's no joke. Along with a domestic treble.
Yeah.
So that's huge, right? He got every trophy he could except for the Champions League.
Right.
And comparing that to Klopp, back-to-back finals in the Champions League, again, no joke.
Yep.
And finally wins it this year.
Yep.
And considerable improvement in the Premier League as well.
Correct.
So, your thoughts? Any preference? I know what mine is.
Considering what Klopp's been doing at Liverpool with respect to the signings he's made, the players he's lost, and, you know, what we've seen from the last Champions League and now this Champions League and even in the Premier League, I think he's been on a steady up with respect to the squad. And yes, I still think City has a better squad, but in terms of application, in terms of just the way things have moved forward, I think Klopp has definitely done a much better job. I take Champions League wins and very close second place, first place finishes over what City's been doing. And I think Pep is sort of plateauing almost. And I think the only thing that he can do now is just spend shitloads of money and even better that amazing squad. So I'm definitely Team Klopp for this one.
Interesting. Me too, man. It's I actually just love him as a personality as well. Always have, yep, ever since his Dortmund days as well.
Right.
And when he came on board, he was very clear about the goals and what he would want to achieve with this Liverpool squad, right? So he tempered expectations immediately, saying, yes, that we're not winning anything. It's going to take time. I'm building a long-term project here.
Correct.
And he's kind of coming true to his word, right?
Yep.
Because with last season and this season, you see, like, apart from that famed attacking three that they have and the counter and stuff like that, overall the squad with Van Dijk, with Alisson,
yes,
with the two young wingbacks, he's doing such a good job in terms of an overall sort of look and feel to the game.
Right.
So if I was given a team with good players and stuff like that, and my choices were between these two managers, I would actually pick Klopp over Guardiola,
right,
given this past season.
Correct.
All right, so we're pretty clear. Not to take anything away from Pep, I think one of the best of all time.
Yeah.
No, doing an EPL back-to-back, given how competitive EPL is,
yeah,
and it's not like he just crept through. Obviously, 97-98 is a thing, but it's not like Chelsea third place were close enough.
Right.
So it was with Liverpool this season. It was with United last season, I feel like, but it's not
again,
like it wasn't a, it wasn't a push.
Yeah.
So why don't we just look at some key matches where we think... the difference sort of crept in between these two.
Yeah.
So coming into December, City had a 2-point lead.
Yeah.
I think it was like 41-39 between City and Liverpool.
Yeah.
And they went on to have kind of a disastrous month.
Yes.
A loss to, not a loss, but losses to Spurs, Newcastle, Leicester and Chelsea away.
Yes.
And a loss to Crystal Palace at home, 2-3.
Yes. Yeah.
We all know that December scheduling is brutal.
Yep.
Almost always, it's sort of make or break for who we think will emerge as the winner of the season and who we think. So keeping that in mind, City actually had a very bad December.
Yeah.
And by when everything was done and dusted, they were actually maybe down to third place. And there was a huge 6 or 7 point gap between, I think it was a 7 point gap between Liverpool and City.
Yeah.
And for everyone out there, it was like a Liverpool title to lose.
Yes, it was in their hands.
It was in their hands. And it was pretty, pretty certain. I mean, I know that City, you can never underestimate them and all of that.
Yeah.
But it was literally clear for Liverpool to sort of take it away from there.
Yeah.
So these losses were actually pretty damaging. And the first game they have in January is against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Liverpool hasn't lost a game all season till then.
Yeah.
And City end up winning that game 2-1.
Yeah.
Which became Liverpool's one and only loss during that entire season, right? Yep. And where they sort of shot themselves in the foot were the draws that they had.
Yeah.
I feel like that sort of changed City's fortunes and their mindset overall. Let's break that game down a little bit, why don't we?
Totally. I think, it was end-to-end stuff. And there was this really cool move where, Mane takes a shot and it comes off the post. And, the whole defense is scrambling. Eduardo's trying to get back. And John Stones the first to the ball. And he's sort of thinking that the ball's gone in. And then it comes off the post. And then there's this weird situation where John Stones doesn't have time to turn around. All he wants to get is, get rid of the ball. And he turns around and he clears the ball. It hits Eduardo.
Right.
It starts to go back towards goal. John Stones is shitting his pants. Salah is, in his predatory instinct, is almost there to, wrap it up.
Right.
And there's this goal line clearance and the ball was outside of the goal line by 1.12 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that clearance ended up nutmegging Salah. So I think that that moment just defined, what City had to do with respect to, having such a bad December and, being so far apart, being in third place, and then just showing Liverpool what they're made of in terms of that just moment. I think it just characterized everything from them from then on. They just went on this crazy ass, winning streak. And yes, they had their ups and downs in Jan as well, but considering how Liverpool had some draws, which we'll get to, and just City just went crazy. So yeah, I think that was super, super momentous for City.
For sure. And it also did one important thing. It bridged the gap from 7-4 between these guys. So this was game week 21 and City sat with 50 and Liverpool sat with 54.
Yeah.
And City, like you said, went berserk, except for that one loss they had to Newcastle, which is the weirdest.
Again, Rondon had back-to-back goals. He scored twice.
And then we move on to game week 25, where City ended up having a double game week.
Yeah.
So they went from straight 56 to 62.
They won both games,
They won both games. And Liverpool ended up drawing.
Yes.
So they were at par at 62.
Yeah, game week 25.
And then City just went ham, dude.
Yeah.
It's 3 points on the trot.
Yes.
Like a machine.
Yeah.
I remember KDB in an interview where every game is a cup final now.
Yeah, pretty much.
So just seeing that instinct from these players and then the hunger.
Yeah.
At a point in the season where they had a very demoralizing December.
Yeah.
I think it's just kudos to Pep, man. We've all seen that Amazon documentary.
Yeah.
We've gotten an insight in terms of how Pep sort of manages his players and how driven he is himself. And that just translates to his players.
Right.
So then it just became a sort of 3-point game week.
Yeah.
And then contrasting that to Liverpool from Jan through March, they ended up having 4 draws.
Yeah, which is, and out of the 4 draws, 3 of them were nil-nils. So those are really bad matches.
And that's literally 8 points that they could have sort of saved there. So they drew against Leicester, West Ham, United and Everton.
Yeah.
This is all after their loss to City.
Correct.
And City going on a 14-game unbeaten run. So they literally left very little room for Liverpool to slip up, which I feel like they did, right?
Right.
I mean, they're dropping 8 points. Even if they had 1 win out of those 4, they would have been the winners.
Close enough,
But, that always happens, right?
I mean, it's okay if you're compensated with the Champions League victory.
Yes, and it's kind of eases it out a little bit, I guess. And then other trophies for Pep. He's capping this great season, great run at the end of the season, one of the all-time greats that we've seen, with an FA Cup and a League Cup victory.
Oh, that League Cup was lucky, man. I mean, Chelsea almost had it.
So, and these two finals also, like the League Cup, obviously Chelsea final on penalties. It seemed like Chelsea had them.
Yes.
Which, again, very contrasting. Chelsea had a very good, I feel like my personal opinion is they had a very good run up.
First half,
A late run of the season as well, right?
Yeah.
You saw Sarri ball, people confused with Sarri ball. All of a sudden, they figured out Jorginho ko clamp down kar do jeet jayenge.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in the mid of the season, everyone's frustrated. Sarri ball sucks. Chelsea fans, I remember you also hating on Sarri ball. I'm making that up. I have no idea if you did or not. And then the late run as well, they ended up third.
Yeah.
They were supposed to, obviously Spurs goofed up as well.
Yeah, typical.
Typical. Well, not typical. Spurs does well with that third, second, fourth.
Right.
But this time they ended up goofing up. They also went to the final of the Champions League. So first time that entire squad plus the managers sort of managing all these matches.
Yeah.
And they finally lost on penalties, 4-3, I think, and ended up winning the League Cup. And then And then they had an FA Cup final with Watford.
Yeah.
Thoroughly demolished that team. 6-0. Totally.
Yeah.
So this City side, man, I mean, everyone knows what Pep needs to achieve next season.
Right.
I feel like even if he retains the EPL,
he
won't be happy himself.
Yeah, he shouldn't be. I mean, it's cool that you pointed out the whole Chelsea thing. I think the three times that Chelsea played City last season with respect to you know, both the league and the League Cup. So Chelsea played City the first time in the league and we beat them 2-0. And that was pretty cool. That was Sarri ball, you know, in its prime. And then we meet them in the League Cup final, 0-0. We almost had them. That's when Kepa basically became assistant manager to Sarri. And he's like, no, I'm not going to substitute myself out. I'm going to be this, you know.
That was some scene, dude. I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, when Sarri announced that he's going to Juventus, we saw, you know, Kepa in his suit in the scene. He was signing as Chelsea manager.
No, the fact that the guy refused. And then I think that drama went on for like 5 or 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's I think the confusion was, which is basically the media story or the PR story, is that Sarri assumed that Kepa is injured, and also you don't want an injured goalkeeper for your penalty shootout,
right?
Or for the extra time. And Kepa said that, oh, if they're confusing it for an injury, I think I'm good. I need 5-7 minutes. Let me get through extra time and I think I'll be good for pens. So, yeah. And I think it's also like, he's a young kid. He's the most expensive keeper in the world right now. And I think until that point, he didn't get to really prove to himself, you know, who he is as a keeper. And I thought that was his moment, which is why he's like, I don't care. You're not going to take this away from me. Like, this is my time. And yeah, it kind of sucks that, you know, it didn't work out for him. But he sort of made up for it in the Europa League, and we won the penalty shootout in the semi-final against Frankfurt. So yeah, it's funny how this whole Chelsea versus City thing from the league to the League Cup. And then when City were killing it in Feb, they killed us 6-0. They scored like 4 goals in 22 minutes.
Yeah.
So
City went into overdrive, man. It was plain to see. But just coming back to the Kepa point, right? Yep. Whatever said and done, you don't say no to a substitution, regardless of the situation.
Yeah.
Right? That's fine. He's a young kid. He's not that experienced. But you're a professional football player. You get paid. That's your job.
Exactly.
And your job is to report and listen to what your boss is saying, who's your manager.
Right.
So regardless of the situation, regardless of how you're feeling, if you're getting subbed, you need to go off. Make your feelings known after that.
Exactly.
Make your manager understand what you were going through. That'll not happen again.
Correct.
But it's a Chelsea match. The entire world is watching.
Exactly.
And to have that, you know, that problems coming up and showing it on field as
in
clearly as that,
world,
I don't think that was cool at all, man.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where the whole player power, you know, thing comes into play. And especially with Chelsea, when we talk about how these players, you know, have access to Roman Abramovich, and, you know, we've got like apparently AVB fired, and we've got other, you know, managers fired if it's not working out. So yeah, it's not cool to do it in the public eye, but I think, yeah, there should have been a better way for Kepa to sort of say that, oh, look, I'm not injured and I'm good to continue. And then Sarri also, I think, wanted to be stubborn and wanted to be like sort of determined on the fact that, no, I'm manager and I call the shots and not you.
But then as soon as he realized that he's getting dragged on, Sarri was the one who relented.
Yes.
He literally was like, okay, just do whatever you want, which imagine how that looks.
Yeah. That's...
He's a manager and then you don't have total control of your team immediately. Like the press is going to eat you up.
Right.
So I don't think that was a good move by Kepa. I feel like Kepa also understands that it's the best learning experience, I guess.
Right.
But shouldn't have been done like that, because, you know, these players go off, they disgruntle, they let it known, they'll show their feelings, they won't high five the manager and all that. Do that, dude.
Yeah.
Pull that shit. I don't care.
Right.
But don't stand in your in your goal and just say like, yeah, I'm not coming off. And then what do you expect the manager to come pull you by the ear? Obviously that's not gonna happen, right?
True. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea did realize, you know, what a bad sort of PR story this will make, and they made him sort of officially apologize and stuff.
No,
but
shit.
That was not cool for him to do. And I think that just shows, you know, how Chelsea season was with respect to the whole Sarri thing and stuff. So, I think that's a great example of what not to do. And that just shows in our results. So,
Hey, man, UEFA League, dude. UEFA Cup, come on, dude. I feel like you count that as zero success.
I mean, just considering how, you know, big Chelsea is as a club, and or rather how big they should be. And in terms of like, you know, the state of mind that I have, like, we should be in a position where we retain players like Hazard, not say that, oh shit, we're not big enough for you. I think, you know, it's cool that, you know, you can go now. And we were like,
just honestly, taking an honest look at it. I know we always start talking about Chelsea because I kind of have a soft spot for them too.
Yeah.
But the fact that A, you did retain Hazard for as long as you could, right? Like, it was a pretty good job, pretty solid job. But just apples to apples, you aren't big enough. You aren't big enough. You aren't as big as Real Madrid.
No, we're not as big as Real Madrid, but considering, you know, what we were like close to 10 years ago with, you know, Lampard, Drogba, Cech, Ashley Cole, all in their prime, and with the young Hazard coming in, I think if we had the same setup and now Hazard had matured, I think he definitely would have stayed. And I think this comes down to the fact that we're not competitive enough to challenge for the UEFA Champions League. I think if that was the case, and he would have been happy to stay here, because, you know, as much as I want him to be successful at Real Madrid, enjoy his football, do his thing, you know, compete for the Ballon d'Or and stuff, I still think he's going to miss how competitive and how kick-ass the Premier League is. And he's not going to get that at the La Liga.
That's true. But it's very tough to compete with the legacy of the Barca and Real Madrid, right? No other club comes close. Yep. And you see these clubs like, especially with Chelsea, like they've always been short-term.
Yeah.
Abramovich has always been short-term results, right? Yeah. So it's very tough that legacy aspect of Chelsea comes in. Maybe in 20 years, a kid who's coming up and learning football looks at Chelsea and Real Madrid with the same lens.
Right.
But it doesn't happen right now.
That's true.
Like, these kids who are coming up in all across the world, their dream is to play for a Real or a Barcelona. So as soon as that opportunity comes, even if Real's not in as good a position as Chelsea, they'd still bite, right?
Correct. That's a fair point, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, again, we've gotten derailed. Thanks to Chelsea. This is, I guess, third time in a row. What I really want to talk about really quickly is
UCL.
Yeah, Pep's UCL, man. Yeah. Like, he's not had a good sort of, he got knocked out quarterfinals 2 years running now.
Right.
Where are they faltering? Let's just look back at the last 2 years under Pep and see what went wrong.
Right.
So 2017-18, they lost to Liverpool in the quarterfinals. They lost 3-0 away and 1-2 at home.
Yeah.
And the 3-0 away was actually super surprising.
That was insane.
I feel like that's the first time we saw what Klopp's Liverpool can actually do.
Exactly.
Like full-on damaging you. Yep. And then obviously we realize as a precursor that that team's going to go to the final.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about those two matches real quick.
Yeah, man. I think the first mistake he made was... So basically Sterling's last match at Anfield, he was missing. He was just... You know, he wasn't there. And considering how important Sterling has been to both Premier Leagues, he sort of took a gamble and he's like, oh, I'm going to play Gundogan instead of Sterling. Mm-hmm. Mistake number one.
Right.
Mistake number two is, you don't get to play your slick passing and from the keeper at Anfield when you have Firmino, Salah and Mane, you know, pressing. And so, yeah, so City were just never in that game, and to have like a keeper, Loris Karius, to attack, like he didn't have a save to make. Like, how much more easier do you want it to be?
Yeah.
But Liverpool were early on song that night. AOC, Chamberlain, he had an insane goal and that just took like everyone by surprise. I'm sure he was surprised by it. Like he just, you know, received the ball and even before the defense could like realize that, oh, he's, you know, has enough space to take a shot, he just whipped the ball in flat. That was some screamer. So yeah, that was Liverpool's night. And, City succumbed to, you know, what Klopp and Anfield and just the whole thing coming together can do. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, we thought they'll come back in the second leg and that didn't happen too.
I feel like just the switch in approach from Klopp's end between first leg and second leg, right? Yeah. Like he knows that he has a lead to protect now.
Yeah.
So it just sort of, he just sort of muted City overall rather than playing his natural style, which led to the 3-0.
Exactly.
So pretty intense in terms of pressure. There were lots of chances and stuff, but lack of clinical ability or clinical finishes.
Yeah.
And Poole just ended up taking their chances where it mattered.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much. I mean, I think the game, Klopp knew that, you know, these guys are going to come out and like try to do their thing and, you know, they just have to wait and just like bite, you know, just like put the bait out and these are going to bite. And I mean, even with like player magnificence, like Bernardo Silva had a really good chance and that's the thing that's made him. I think he just gets the ball, you know, doesn't need too much of space, whips the shot in and it hits the post. So a combination of being unlucky and having everything against them. But yeah, Poole were just more clinical, took their chances and they just wiped City off of the map of the UCL. So that was really cool.
And then talking about the previous season, we saw City play Spurs.
Yep.
It's weird that they're playing these EPL teams and still not pushing through, even though in the EPL, they're actually demolishing everyone.
Exactly.
Lost to Spurs 1-0 away and then 4-3 at home.
Right.
And David Silva, he was injured at that time. KDB was recovering, so he didn't end up playing.
Yep.
First leg was straightforward, I guess, from Spurs, and they got a 1-0 under their belt.
Right.
And in the second leg, it was 4-3.
Yes.
And there was a crazy sort of VAR disruption.
Yeah, right.
What was that about?
So, yeah, I mean, we'll get into more VAR and what exactly, you know, happens and stuff. But yeah, City, despite ended up, you know, winning this game, they lost out on away goals. And this was in, I think, the 92nd minute or something. And yeah, basically, Eriksen was back passing and Aguero was in an offside position, which was very difficult to tell. It's totally a subjective decision that was taken, and obviously VAR made it worse for City. And I think this is Sterling's cheat code. It's like a FIFA cheat code. Like, if we're losing 0-0 or if we're drawing 1-1 or whatever, you know, Sterling will just pop up with some random ass goal in the 92nd, 94th, 98th minute.
Right.
Didn't happen this time.
Didn't happen.
Yeah, so
4-3, man.
Yeah, this, I mean, you know,
well, to give Spurs credit, they also went on to the final.
Yes.
So it's not like it was a fluke or anything like that.
It wasn't, but it I mean, both, not just, you know, this season and the previous season, even the season before that, City ended up losing to Monaco. This is Kylian Mbappe's Monaco.
Right.
You know, on away goals. I think they I think it was 6-6 over the two legs, and they lost on away goals.
Right.
So I think just the UCL performances over these last 3 years is a big slap in the face of, you know, Pep Guardiola, because we know he can win the league. He's done it with Barcelona. He's killed Real Madrid. He's done it with Bayern Munich, where he's won with like 18, 20, 24 points lead over second place.
Yeah.
It's clearly there's something off with the UCL, and he's not here to win the league with City. He's here to win the Champions League. He's here to put City on the map that, you know, we're one of the best, and we know, and we can stay there. You know, we're not going to just challenge for it.
That's true. His league management is, it's playing for everyone to see the results, and yep, his cup management is where it's lacking.
Yep.
Despite the initial success with Barcelona, that Barcelona team, I feel like you throw them anywhere in any format, right, any situation, they're going, right, to demolish.
Exactly. And considering the squad he has, like, you know, on paper, he does have the best squad in Europe. And, you know, the Premier League is tough, and yeah, it's not easy as La Liga or the Bundesliga. So yeah, I think it has gotten to him in terms of, you know, how brutal December is, the scheduling, you know, making sure you're like with KDB killing it, you know, in the first Premier League. He was player of the season, and then he went missing next season because he was injured. David Silva is, you know, on the fag end of his career, or at the fag end of his peak. We have Bernardo Silva, you know, turning up and sort of taking over. So even with that squad, like, what changes would you make? How much money do you have? How does that work now? Does he reach a point where he's saturated and be like, is it just a matter of money right now?
You know, that's interesting. Let's just talk about that squad real quick, right?
Yep.
So apart from the keeper, the back line, they have Kyle Walker, Laporte, Stones, Mendy, and Zinchenko.
Yep.
I haven't even written Otamendi here, but he's still technically a part of it.
Right.
Midfield is crazy, though. It's Gundogan, David Silva, KDB, Bernardo Silva, Mahrez, Phil Foden, and Fernandinho.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's some depth there.
Yeah.
Attacking, they have Sterling, Sané, Gabriel Jesus, yeah, and
Sergio Aguero.
So, and in terms of the incoming transfers, yeah, nothing confirmed yet, but... Yeah. João Cancelo might come from Juve.
Yeah, what's your take on that? Because I think he's left back, right back, can be a wing back.
He's a beast, dude. Yeah, a beast. You know, the problem is that these great players in the Italian league,
yeah,
don't get that much exposure. So they're like hidden gems.
Right.
And whenever a player like that leaves Juve, it just breaks my heart. Kingsley Coman.
Yes.
Right? Such a great player, man. Yeah. And he's killing it at Bayern. Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's plain to see. Future of France, yeah. Very clearly, right? So I love Cancelo. Right. And... seems like his heart is set, and Pep's heart is set on getting him in there.
Yeah.
So that might happen. And right, then we've been hearing about Harry Maguire for like 2-3 years now.
Yeah, I think that's going to be two birds, one stone, because their homegrown quota, like, that they're going to have a tough, yes, time with that.
Yeah, so they're supposed to maintain a minimum 8 players from...
In a squad of 25, yes.
In a squad of 25.
Yeah.
And they currently sit on 4, maybe,
yes,
5.
Yeah, 4.
So if they sit on 4, the penalty is that you can only register a squad of 21 players.
Correct.
Which can be brutal, given the depth they have. They might have to sacrifice a really good player.
Yes.
So that's really tough. Another piece of news that came up pretty recently is Rodri from Atletico.
Yes.
Is on his list of, yes, players that he wants to sign.
Yeah.
Rodri is he's a great player.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of sort of left of center. He's not your usual professional footballer. He sort of became famous with Villarreal a few years ago. And at the same time, he was still a college student and he didn't choose to have this fancy car. Apparently, he has an Opel Corsa secondhand that he bought of some elderly woman.
That was a nice car, dude.
He didn't choose to like rent this fancy place or buy a fancy place. He was staying in a student accommodation on university campus.
Right.
And he would go every weekend, you know, to play his professional football league matches with Villarreal, you know, and then come, you know, throughout the week and do his training and then study as well. And then he got his 18 million move to Atletico, did some really good stuff there. Diego Simeone is not a bad manager at all to like, you know, bring up your career. And, he's a no nonsense guy. He's off of Instagram. Is not into tattoos and stuff. So yeah, he's this really cool guy. And in the national team, we see him as Sergio Busquets' successor. I like to call him Bitch Kids. Yeah, I don't get why Busquets is there. I don't know what he's doing.
We'll talk after the show, man. I'll tell you why he's good.
Fair. And yeah, in cities, Pep, in Pep cities, he's going to be a beautiful successor to Fernandinho. And they've also got Gundogan as an alternative
and,
in that position.
And Phil Foden. Yeah. I think Phil Foden's good. David Silva just recently announced that this is his last season at City.
Right.
And he actually ended up saying that Phil Foden is going to be either my replacer or Fernandinho's replacer.
Yeah.
He's very versatile.
Yes.
He's got a good grounded head.
Yes.
And a good footballing brain.
Right.
So let's see how that goes. None of these transfers apart from Maguire is adding to that homegrown conundrum.
Right.
I don't think he cares, man. He's fine with 21. If your 21 list looks like this, yeah. I'm fine, man. I'm fine with it.
Possible, but then he might lose out on Delph also. Delph hasn't started a game since he got sent off against, their loss to Leicester. And Zinchenko's made, you know, left back his first team thing.
And
so.
Just signed a long-term contract.
Exactly. Yeah. So, let's see. Maybe it'll come down to that. Maybe when we're doing this, you know, next year and they've still lost the Champions League, we'll be like, oh, maybe they should have had more homegrown players.
Because Champions League is a bigger game, dude.
Yeah.
Zidane's back in Real.
Yes.
Juve is sort of ramping up in terms of
hype. Oh, yes.
So it's not like it's only Liverpool to worry about, right?
Correct, yeah.
And then on top of that, you have the EPL.
Right.
So I won't be surprised if he doesn't win the Champions League.
Right.
But I guess in that situation, at least the EPL should compensate for the loss there.
Okay.
All right, man. So that's sort of our take on, well, it was supposed to be a look back of the season, but it basically became an analysis of City, which I guess was the season.
Justified,
and
a
little bit about Liverpool.
Yeah.
Why don't we jump to our TFC take where we're going to be talking about VAR? So video assistant referee, what's the deal, man? What's the problem?
Yeah or nay, huh? Okay, so yeah, quick, 30-second theory tutorial. Specifics on all three words. It's video, it's assistant, and obviously referee. So the final decision will always stay with the ref who's on the ground. Hence, you know, the word assistant. And VAR can only come into the game for game-changing incidents. Now, game-changing incidents are goals, penalties, and yellow and red cards. Now, this is basically all come from, you know, the last 10, 20, 30 years of, you know, what we've seen in terms of, you know, how human judgment, you know, can make a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of error. For example, Graham Paul, has been one of the best referees, both at international level and, you know, national tournaments. And he ended up yellow carding a Croatian dude in the 2006 World Cup three times. So he gave him one yellow card, he gave him a second yellow card, and then at the third yellow card, he gave him the red card. So
don't they note down numbers and stuff?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, they have, you know, assistants on the side. They have a fourth assistant. You know, he's doing his own thing and he still made this error.
Imagine the player, man. He's like, but here.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, he didn't realize. I mean, whether he realized or not, that's another thing. His teammates, another thing. The opponents didn't realize.
Yeah.
The management on the other side didn't realize.
Yeah.
So I guess we're just trying to make sure and pull down how often humans are prone to error. And like, I have a lot of respect for the linesman, man, to call offsides.
Yeah, especially the close ones. Right?
Exactly. And like the commentators, like, you know, they have the luxury of, you know, seeing replays and they just see like the guy leaning outside or his elbows outside or like faces outside. And I was like, yeah, that has to be offside. And to catch it like in real time, that's insane.
And to these referees' credit, for the most part, they get it right.
Exactly.
It's understandable that they get these close ones wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you're getting it right, that's as good as you can do it, right?
Exactly. But then considering, you know, if you're getting these decisions wrong, you know, and it could lead to like, you know, losing the semi-final, losing the final, not going through relegation, promotion, all of that stuff. I think that's why they've sort of, you know, said that, okay, maybe we need a little help, and we're not removing the human element entirely, but, you know, we will sort of try to make sure that's a little more smooth. And, you know, it's more down to the purity of sport and, you know, a clear winner versus a clear loser, rather than taking all the light away from just like one or two bad incidents. Like, right. Yeah, for example, like even goal line technology, you know, 2006 World Cup, England, Germany, pre-quarters, you know, Lampard hits a crazy ass shot, comes off the bar, bounces inside. It's like a foot inside the goal, and then it bounces out. The goal wasn't given.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
And goal line technology, for its, just for its benefit, it's very seamless. It's yes. just like an indication on the watch. Yeah, and it's either goal. It's very binary, right? So there's no time wasted.
Exactly.
So that's pretty good. So just to clarify, VAR essentially is going to be used if an incident occurs and either the ref asks for the assistance or confirmation of something or VAR or the VAR, whoever the team of referees recommends that the ref does a review. So the ref still has power to say no.
Exactly. So yeah, so it's up to him, you know, whether to ask for confirmation, or if he might have missed something, they'll be like, oh, you want to have another look at this? This is what happened. So he'll take a call on his, you know, ear set that, okay, this has happened. This is my, you know, assumption of it, or my perspective, I don't need to see it again. And they're like, okay, cool, that's on you. But if he does decide to sort of review it, he can run up and see his own version of a replay, which is where I think we'll get into the pros and cons of, you know, how it disturbs the game and how it slows down the game, because he has to run up to the half line, see the thing, multiple angles, multiple replays, multiple reviews, and then he takes a call.
It's basically a version of third umpire in cricket.
But he's not the third umpire. This is like a 2.1 umpire.
Yeah. So obviously the biggest flak of VAR is that it disrupts the game.
Yes.
Which it does. Yep. It's been tested out quite a bit now. It was tested on the World Cup last year, this year, Champions League knockout stages.
Yes.
Serie A has had it for a while.
Yeah.
So there's enough data to show what the problems with VAR are, what the benefits of VAR are.
Yep.
So just talking about the current Women's World Cup, they came out with a study which says there's an average delay of 7 to 8 minutes.
Yep.
Right? And in one case, there was an 18-minute delay. I think that was CONCACAF or Women's World Cup. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know this was Women's World Cup. Yeah, England-Cameroon.
It's crazy. Like, 7 to 8 minutes is actually pretty messed up, given how momentum is such an integral part of the game, right?
Yes.
So, what I really like about the Premier League is that they were super cautious about this.
Yes.
And they're like, sabko karne do, dekhte kya ho raha hai, kya problems hai. And then they're going to introduce VAR from this new season. And they kind of released this quote-unquote mandate, right?
Correct.
Where they've urged the referees not to stop the game and refer to pitch-side TVs for review.
Correct.
Only in case. But then, how does that matter? Like, we see a lot of times where VAR is... Yep. Used and detects a problem or a situation, which in a lot of cases, the referee would just not stop the game over. So I guess the EPL is trying to tell its refs that, listen, if it's a situation like that, don't pause it.
Right.
Just keep going. This is only for very specifics, very important incidents, right?
Yeah.
And if a red card instance was missed, then VAR will simply inform the referee without requiring a review.
Correct.
So the VAR just says that, the guys just say that, listen, that's a red card.
Yes.
You missed out on it.
Yeah.
And the ref just takes it on blind faith, shows a red card, and the game moves on.
Correct. I think what you're saying makes sense. At the same time, you know, the specific incident of England versus Cameroon, where as opposed to like a 7-8 average time delay, we had an 18-minute time delay. So yeah, there was this really bad tackle, and maybe without VAR, it could have been a yellow card, could have been a red card. You know,
it would have been a decision. I'm sure it would have taken its time too, but it would have been a decision made, move on.
Exactly.
Right? And deal with the ramifications after.
Exactly. Yeah. But this time, you know, with multiple replays and everything, you know, going on with the time delay, we just thought that it's getting closer and closer to a red card.
Right.
And then it just turned out to be a yellow card. So it just made things worse. And they were like, oh, we wasted time and we didn't get the decision. Why do you take the time to review it if you didn't think it didn't warrant a red card? So I think, that's where VAR has had its sort of pitfalls and stuff. But yeah, hoping next season onwards, it might just be a little more smooth.
It will get smooth, man. There's no other direction it can take. It can't get more disruptive than this. That's impossible. So these guys are just figuring out how to iron out these issues where it takes a lot of time.
Yep.
And in most cases, that time taking happens when the referee runs to the half line to look at the TV screen.
Correct.
So we were talking about City and Spurs quarterfinal.
Right.
VAR had a big part to play in that second leg, right? So in that Sterling incident, let's break that down.
Yeah, I mean, this is also like a combination of like, this wasn't an objective, sort of incident. So basically, you know, Eriksen was, you know, close to the defense and he wanted to pass back to his defense. And what ended up happening was that Bernardo Silva tried to intercept, didn't really get control of it. The ball hits him, then goes towards Aguero. Aguero passes to Sterling and he scores. Now, Aguero was in an offside position. But did Bernardo Silva really pass the ball to him? He just changed the trajectory of the ball. He didn't have control of it.
So the argument is whether that was counted as a back pass or a pass by Silva to Aguero.
Exactly. So that comes under the purview of offside. Now, it wasn't given offside in real time.
Okay.
Because it was too quick to see. And it's clear that Silva didn't have control of the ball.
Right.
It just hit him and then went to Aguero and then he ended up scoring. But when they, and because it's a goal, you know, nothing was called in real time and a goal is a game-changing incident. When VAR went to review it, they saw that, oh, Aguero's in an offside position, so let's check where the ball came from. And because it simply touched Bernardo Silva, it was given as offside.
So when is VAR used in this situation? Is it just like, it's a goal,
yep,
so let's just start reviewing it? Or is it the opponents appealing like a cricket situation? Like what makes VAR come into play in a situation like that?
Exactly. So first of all, if players make a TV sign, they get yellow carded. So the players cannot call for VAR reviews.
Right.
But yeah, game changing incidents are basically every goal is checked. Now, if a goal is given, it's in smooth play, they will check for offside. They will check for any infringement. They will check for any off the ball stuff.
It's part of the process that no matter how clean it looked, you just do a quick review.
For every goal, for every penalty given in real time by the referee. And for every time the referee is giving a yellow or a red card, they will just make sure and they'll justify why he's giving the yellow or the red card. And also it helps to make sure that there's no mistaken identity.
So in this case, it's the VAR team like, hey man, I think this was an offside. You need to take a look.
Exactly.
I'm so curious in terms of what that in your conversation is like.
Yeah.
So offside. Nahi yaar. Offside. Nahi yaar.
And while this is going on, like the referee has to point to his earpiece so that he can let the public know that he's talking to his
VAR
team.
That's the TV screen sign that the umpire does in cricket.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, but like, you know, considering how much comes under, you know, VAR and stuff like that, there are these really cool incidents and we don't know, you know, whether it comes under VAR or not. Like there was an incident many, many years ago, Pepe Reina in goal for Liverpool, and a Liverpool fan at Anfield had thrown a beach ball, this massive red color beach ball.
Was it on the cop side or the other side? If it was a cop side, that would have been worse. Been murdered by now, man.
Yeah, and Darren Bent, Charlton Athletic, takes a scuffed shot, which is easy for Pep, you know, Pepe Reina to like just collect.
Right.
It hits the freaking beach ball and it goes into the goal. Now, do you call it back and disallow the goal and say that, oh, the referee should have gotten rid of the ball or whatever? Does that come under VAR? I don't know.
But in that situation, for example, it's clear to see what has happened,
yeah,
right? And the referee saw that it took a deflection of the beach ball.
Right.
So in this case, what would VAR do? The referee took a clear conscious decision that that's a goal.
Right.
He doesn't need to see the footage again. He knows what happened.
Right.
So I don't think VAR would have a difference in opinion here. Like the referee actually thought that that should be a goal.
Right.
So I don't think VAR would have changed it that much.
Right.
It would have just been funny to look at that replay on and on.
Yeah.
And see Liverpool's hopes go up. You know, another interesting thing is that it's not interesting. It's kind of hilarious. Yeah. It's Luis Suarez, our favorite goofer upper.
Right.
And see, like, for example, his bites, that would have been straight reds.
Yeah.
Italy should have gotten that.
Yeah.
Still lost the World Cup because of that. I blame him. And so in Copa America, Luis Suarez has the chance to score a goal.
Yeah.
Shoots. The goalkeeper saves it.
With his hands.
Appeals for handball. The guy's appealing for handball. All right. There's another incident. I don't know if it was the same match or another match. A pitch invader comes into the pitch.
Right.
An opponent trips him.
Right.
Appeals for a yellow card. This guy should be given, like, there should be a rule set for tackling players like this. Like, stupidity.
Right.
Like, you're disrupting the game. You're just being an idiot. You should be given a yellow card there. I don't know if VAR can help there.
No, I think he should be given an award. He makes it more interesting, man. What do you say?
I feel like punching him, man. He's a great, very talented player, plain to see, but he beat Ivanovic that one time.
Yeah, he's a cannibal.
And he's done a similar incident in Ajax or Atletico, wherever he was.
Yeah.
I don't care, dude. I don't care. All right, man. So that's pretty much what we have in terms of VAR. I'm very curious to see how it pans out in the EPL.
Right.
it's just like players like Suarez and all these players who just like keep hounding the ref. They're a big problem in terms of causing disruption as much as VAR is too, right? Because if you have a decision which didn't go, which is plain, which the referee decided that it goes against the opponents, and you have six players from the team surrounding the referee being like just screaming, shouting at him, that's a minute too wasted right there, because there'll be a yellow that goes up, stop it, a fight that breaks out, stuff like that. So that has to play into the whole disruption angle as much as the actual disruption caused by the referee reviewing it.
Correct.
So I'm very interested to see how the referee sort of handle this, take it into the system and make it as seamless as possible.
Yeah.
I have no doubts that going forward, they'll keep innovating, they'll keep adding evolving it to the point where it becomes less and less disruptive.
Yes.
But overall, I'm a big yay on VAR, man. It's high time technology comes into play in sports. We're seeing it in all other sports as well.
Yeah.
Even a sport like Formula One, which is so technology dominant already, it's still adding more and more and more and more.
Correct.
So you can't just ignore that. Yeah. You can't ignore it. Your responsibility as FIFA and UEFA and leagues and all is to make it as seamless as possible, yet integrated so that it's a fair game at the end of the day.
Right. I'm totally on the VAR bandwagon as well. I think it makes defenders, you know, more careful about not raising their arms and, you know, make sure they put it behind. And I'm sure, you know, Sissoko agrees with me. Otherwise, the Champions League final would have been more interesting.
So that wraps up this episode of the Football Corner. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Again, you can catch us wherever you guys get your podcasts. You can also follow us at Bunch of Sports on all social media. And we're going to be doing a quick look back on the rest of the leagues because we feel like EPL deserved its own sort of special episode here.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about Bayern and Barcelona and Juve. Real Madrid, of course. And Juve, I don't think we need to talk about them. It was pretty straightforward. Ronaldo and Champions League as well.
Is this the first time he didn't win Golden Boot?
Yeah, and he was fourth highest scorer in Serie A.
Oh, damn, fourth. Yeah. Wow, what
you
a failure.
Who's highest?
Who's?
Quagliarella. You remember that guy?
Yeah, of course I do.
Highest scorer in the Serie A. Again, we'll talk about that next episode. Don't want to eat up too much in this one.
Yeah.
Catch you guys next week.